Peter Pomerantsev worked for 10 years in Russian media as a journalist and TV producer. He's now based at the London School of Economics, writing about propaganda and media. He first arrived in Moscow in 2001, a year after Putin came into power. And at the time, the mood in the media industry was souring. It appeared that the newfound freedom many journalists experienced in the decade following the collapse of the Soviet Union was now coming to an end.
There was already kind of a current of thinking that you would encounter, which viewed the whole of history as a series of information battles. And that was a very hard concept for me to get my head around because I'd always thought about propaganda as a battle of ideas. But when people in Russia would talk about information warfare, they meant something else. They meant the use of information to destabilize another society in a very militaristic way. So it was kind of almost a philosophy that saw information as being essentially a weapon or a tool. Yeah, the content didn't matter. It only had a certain effect.
And this way of thinking first started gaining mainstream traction after the fall of the USSR in the 90s. In 1999, Marshal Igor Sergeyev, then Minister of Defence, proposed that Russia, unable to compete militarily with the West, would engage in what he referred to as asymmetrical directions. In other words, information warfare. One educational military text from 2011 describes information warfare as, quote, an invisible radiation.
It was a very, very broad definition of information warfare, not just sort of within the sort of narrow way that Western military people refer to it as part of a war, but kind of extending that to the whole of society, sort of a permanent thing that's happening all the time. And the difficulty that it poses is that it kind of blurs the lines between peace and war.
When Putin became president, this militaristic way of thinking about information was co-opted by senior figures in media and politics. Vasily Gatov worked in Russia as a media executive for several of the biggest media companies in the 90s and 2000s. He saw firsthand how Putin's media strategy was developed by, namely, two figures, Mikhail Lesin, then Minister of Press, and Vladislav Surkov, one of Putin's chief aides and ideologues.
Initially, they just wanted messages negative to Putin to be significantly diminished. But soon they realized that if they only try to silence criticism, they cannot produce as much news events that are needed. They also started to develop the agenda that they thought would comfortably support Putin's leadership.
How this worked in practice is that Kremlin clerks would just send out their requests to news editors. What news to cover, what news not to cover, what should be emphasized and what should be skimmed over.
This is a very interesting and very unusual development because first it looks like a kind of repetition of agitprop of Soviet Union. In fact, this is completely different because no special organization was appointed to create this agenda. It's not a formal organization. It's not kind of a bunker underneath the Kremlin where a group of Coke-enabled geniuses write Russian fakes. No, it's very dull clerks in Kremlin who write their necessities on paper and distribute it to media. I mean, we need to underline that America does something wrong. Do it. And then this message comes to Channel 1 or to RT or to RIA Novosti.
The Kremlin's editorial direction is very broad. They just say what they want the overall message to be.
So it's like a self-winding machine that knows Kremlin request, enthusiastically runs to fulfill it, and then claim their own achievement, even if the message was initiated in Kremlin. It's a new propaganda. It's make things that other people will replicate. And it very much kind of relies on self-censorship rather than on any other tool.
It's up to the news editors to apply their creativity to produce stories that will push out the message.
These people in RT or VGTRK or Первый канал, they say so not because they believe in this, but because they are afraid that if they're not saying that, they will sooner or later be replaced by someone who do it more enthusiastically or cleverly.
Russia's been called sort of a postmodern dictatorship, and by definition, there are no authors in postmodernism. There is no censor. No, that's why it's quite flexible. It's like a goo.
That's Peter Pomerantsev again. He says former Kremlin advisor Gleb Pavlovsky probably had the best description of Putin's media strategy. He called it a free jazz orchestra.
So there's a tune, you know, everyone's doing Night in Tunisia, but then somebody can go off and do a jazz solo around that tune. So we know the tune is Hate America, but then you go and improvise. It's a very sort of freeform approach in that sense.
The mantra of Margarita Simonyan, who heads RT, Russia's state-run international news channel, is there is no such thing as objective reporting. The channel is funded by the Kremlin with an estimated budget of $230 million per year and services in English, German, Spanish and Arabic.
What's funny is that they're using the language of diversity of opinion and freedom of speech to undermine it. I mean, on the strategy they've alighted on, which is essentially, you know, alternative opinions. What's wrong with alternative opinions? You know, more free speech, more, you know, that's kind of the language they've adopted, which is our language.
Russian state media provides a platform for people with a wide variety of opinions. Nationalists, Brexiteers, people on the extreme right, even people on the left. Whoever needs it, really. And this is done to project messages that are divisive to the West.
They push it to its logical absurdity. There's no difference between a fact and a conspiracy theory, or between an academic expert and some nutcase that they found off the street. And that's much harder to find any way to kind of stand up to than if somebody's coming like, communism is a better system and you can prove that it's not. Here they're just, you know, almost satirising our own language and pushing it further.
And that's the difficulty with this new kind of information warfare. How do you respond to a loose strategy that is not interested in pushing one single ideology or even really persuading people? Rather, it aims to undermine all ideologies and facts and to destabilise the very idea of a truth. For America Abroad, this is Dasha Lisitsina.